We're going to continue our chat with Jason Louv, author of John Dee and the Empire of Angels. And, of course, we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Jason Louv. We'll get your calls as well. Jason, what is Enochian magic and how does that work?
So Enochian magic is kind of the tagline for it. It's the type of magic that Dee and Kelly were doing. And more specifically, it's the magic that was delivered to them by the angels, which is this, you know, this language, you know, as the angels gave them this language that is supposed to be the language spoken by humanity before the fall from Eden and the language spoken by angels. And it was not just a language that they gave them, but a whole magical system, which is designed to help human beings make direct contact with God and the angels on their own terms, not instead of the church, but in addition to, mainstream Christianity. And so what the angels were trying to do there, allegedly, if you take this literally, or, you know, whatever this was provide a way for human beings to get a broadband internet connection to God and the angelic realms, which they wanted to do because they felt that humans were quite fallen and were not, you know, of course, not following the teachings of Christ or the teachings of religion for the last several thousand years. And so they wanted humans to be able to get a direct line so that they could get the message clearly, I think.
Well, it's a wonder how many people confuse what David Copperfield does with the kind of magic we're talking about tonight. Those are real illusionists, aren't they?
Sure. And, you know, as I always say, stage magicians produce illusions, but real magicians take illusions away.
So true. Now, back to where we are today. Can you relate for us, Jason, some kind of story that dealt with magic and how it worked for somebody? Do you have any cases or anything like that?
In what sense?
I mean, how has magic been applied and how did it work for somebody?
Well, I think that Dee and Kelly are a great example and a great study of what magic is actually like, in the sense that, you know, they spent all this time, you know, 7 years doing these rituals and then having these basically psychedelic visions. I mean, you know, practically speaking, what magic is you kind of do, you know, a little ritual and then you have kind of an internal psychedelic vision, if you will, but without chemicals, but it only lasts maybe 15 minutes or half an hour. And, you know, it's kind of like a waking dream. And from that waking dream, maybe you get some insights or information that can be directly applicable to your life. And that's kind of what real magic is like. It's not as much, you know, like the Hollywood version where people are throwing fireballs out of their hands and that type of thing. It's kind of a way of having, you know, deep visionary internal experiences. However, when you apply those insights from those experiences to the real world, that you can have a profound influence. And so I think that Dee and Kelly are a good example of this, in that they spent 7 years engaged in these rituals and yet had such a profound, that wasn't just delusion, it wasn't just self-hypnosis, because it had such a profound influence on the world, because they brought the ideas out of those sessions to the world, and the ideas that the angels gave them became, over the next 100 years, very inspirational to, for instance, the Rosicrucians and the Freemasons, and also the people who founded the Royal Society and who created science. And the core idea there that came out of the angelic sessions was that human beings should have a right to spiritual and intellectual self-determination, that they should be able to carve out their own spiritual destiny, in this case, without the control of the Catholic Church. And that idea, that core idea that people should be spiritually free and free to inquire into the nature of the universe without the church breathing down their neck, well, that's what created modern science. And it's also, by the way, what created America, because the founding fathers, of course, of America were all Freemasons and in some cases Rosicrucians. And though the Freemasons and Rosicrucians drew their inspiration from Dee and his work, and this idea that human beings should be free to spiritually self-determine and connect with the divine realms on their own in the ways that the way that the angels wanted them to, without the control of the church. And so America, as it originally was created, was kind of laid out as an alchemical experiment where these secret societies wanted to create, and Mitch Horowitz talks about this at length in his book, Occult America. But they wanted to create America as a new place where people could be free and live a golden age of scientific and spiritual inquiry. And of course, this was before the train tracks of science diverge, where now we think of science and spirituality as two different things. But at this time, they were not. They were one thing. It was just wanting to understand what reality is and what the universe is and what God, for lack of a better word, is. And it hadn't been diverged on two separate train tracks into two separate disciplines. So what people wanted at this time was to be free. And this came out of Dean Kelly's angelic sessions and has had such a profound influence on history. If you think of not just the creation of the British Empire, for better or worse, but also the foundation of America and the creation of modern science, and all the way up to the modern day with the inspiration of, later Hermetic societies like the Golden Dawn, and then through the rocket scientist Jack Parsons, who was,
He was an occultist too, though, wasn't he?
He was, and he was directly engaged with D.N. Kelly's Enochian magic, and Jack Parsons, of course, was the guy that started NASA JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratories, and one of the first people to take rocketry seriously, and the person that invented solid-state rocket fuel, which is responsible for putting us on the moon, and which also fueled all the nuclear weapons in the 60s, all the ICBMs. But he was directly engaged in repeating D.N. Kelly's experiments. And I don't think that it's a coincidence that you can see that when D.N. Kelly were experimenting with Enochian, they were in the process of building a worldwide empire through naval capability, through ships, a British empire. And then 400 years later, which is just the blink of an eye in historical time, Jack Parsons is experimenting with Enochian while he's engaged in getting the human race off planet and creating a solar system or the beginnings perhaps of a galactic empire if we look quite far out into the future. And so this is what I'm talking about when I say how profound of an influence this Enochian magic has had on the world. It's so profound that it's built the world all around us. It's right in front of our face, is what this has created. And that's the kind of thing that happens from real magic. It's not throwing fireballs out of your hands, but maybe, just maybe, it's helping the positive forward evolution of humanity.
Exactly. To the phones now we go. Let's go to Monique in Sunland, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Monique.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Thank you so much. So I think this must be a special show and a special night because I was taking an acting class, and out of eight of us, three of us were age 44. None of us looked our age. And I'm thinking about that on the way home because 444 is an angel number, which you're probably aware of. And you had said something profound, and I looked at the clock, and there it is, 1244. And as I parked, it was 111, another angel number. So I'd like you, if you could just discuss a little bit about when you see specific numbers, the messages that the angels are giving. And then the second part of my question is, I used to see 444 with someone who's special, and he has a condition, and after he went into a psychosis, he got very, very religious biblically, and after that, it was like, no more 444, and what you're thinking and anything that's related to esoteric that you're talking tonight, no good. So we've parted.
Okay, we're losing you on the phone a little bit. Did you grab some of that, Jason?
I did, and it's wonderful that you're so plugged in spiritually, and I will say to that, my perspective is that all numbers are sacred and all numbers are holy, and One of the wonderful things, by the way, of when people start to notice these things, which, you know, Carl Jung called synchronicities, when they start to notice these little winks from the universe, you know, it's kind of, it can be the beginning of a process where they're understanding that the universe is kind of alive and kind of talking to them. However, I will say that as time goes on, if you engage in that more, you start to realize that it's not just specific messages, like it's not just 444, or it's not just 111. It's actually everything, you know, everything, you know, everything you see, your entire existence is a divine communication to you, but not you specifically. It just is happening. It's, as the Buddhists say, it's just kind of spontaneously arising. And noticing that is a great way to understand the holy and sacred nature of everything in the world, not just certain dogmas or books. It's really the whole, and Dee saw the world this way, and the Hermetic tradition sees the world this way, that all of nature is an open book. The book of nature is, and our life experiences are communicating with us. But it's not just us specifically, it's everyone and everything. And the only time we get into trouble with this is if we think that, you know, that there's something special about us and there's some special message that's coming just for us alone. It's not quite like that. It's more like just becoming aware of the spontaneously arising meaning from the universe. And one thing that I always tell my students or new students of magic is, people often have an idea when they're first starting to study magic or spirituality or whatever it happens to be, that magic or sacred experiences emerge out of some type of technical process, or that you do certain rituals or that for some reason, because you are special, that magic is happening for you. As you progress along the path, what you realize is that magic is kind of it doesn't come out of people. It's not, you know, you're not the people who do magic are not special people. Magic is just you know, and there's nothing better or worse about people who do magic than anyone else. It's just that magic itself is a kind of a spontaneously emerging quality of the universe. It just emerges on its own out of nature. And people who are interested in magic just become aware of it when most people tune it out. But it's not like it's happening for individual people specifically. This is often where, like, for instance, people like Aleister Crowley or people in the past kind of got tripped up sometimes, where they thought that because they got results with magic that this gave them some special spiritual status different from other people. It's really not like that. Magic is just becoming aware of the magic that's emerging from nature and emerging from the universe around us all the time and from our lives and our relationships and connections with other people. And that's what it's about. Right?
You write a lot about the apocalypse in John Dee, The Empire of Angels. How come?
Well, it's very simple. The West, and particularly Protestant Christianity since the Renaissance, has been fixated on the idea that not only is the apocalypse a literal event, but that perhaps it must be brought about faster. And John Dee and in the Angelic Sessions was very much into this idea. And one of the reasons I've written this book is not to glorify that idea at all, but simply to bring it into people's awareness, to realize that there's kind of been this secret thing going on in Western culture, this idea that, well, the Book of Revelation must be literally real, and therefore the sooner we cause the apocalypse, you know, even prompt it to happen, the sooner we bring it about, well, it's kind of just like, you know, pushing all the way through the cut. It's like you get through the other side and then Jesus comes back faster. And this idea has not only been confined to the occult tradition, but you can see it, for instance, in the creation of the British Empire. You can see it in Dee's work. You can see it in, certainly since the 19th century, you can see it in dispensationalist Christianity, and you can see it in the evangelical right, and you can see it in the fact that, for instance, 1 in 3 Americans, according to a 2006 Pew Forum study on religion, believe that Christ will come back literally in our lifetime, and that we live in the end of the world. and that the Left Behind books are the most read books in America after the Bible.
They are. And Tim LaHaye's books, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And but you see it in the fact that Tim LaHaye and Jerry Falwell and people like that were advisors in Reagan's White House, and that Ronald Reagan believed it was his divinely ordained role to shepherd America to mm-hmm. the end of the world.
And Nancy was Russia. Into this kind of mysticism, too. Nancy Reagan.
She was. And astrology, and it got very weird behind closed doors. And just, you know, and that's kind of what I want to cast light on in this book. It's like these people in power have always been interested in these things, whether it's Elizabeth employing John Dee or Nancy Reagan being interested in astrology and Ronald Reagan being interested in the apocalypse. But certainly George Bush Jr., thought that he was hastening the apocalypse in the Middle East. And right now, Mike Pence and John Bolton, you know, we can see this same type of evangelical accelerationist theology.
Well, Hitler was into this in a big way, too, wasn't he? In terms of the occult and things like that?
Well, Hitler was certainly, was absolutely interested in the occult in a very dark way. But Hitler's a little bit different in the sense that Hitler wasn't really a Christian. He kind of gave lip service to Christianity because the German public was so Christian. But behind closed doors, Hitler was quite antagonistic to any religion. And he wanted a much more, he kind of had this conception of religion that it should just be focused on the German people and nature and glorify strength and the strength of the German people. And he was a bit more atheistic in his approach, but also very much, you know, the Nazis were very into using the imagery of paganism in kind of a perverse way, and certainly Himmler was very much interested in that, and they very much abused the occult, and I think modern occult people are very clear on this, that they abused the occult to try to manipulate people with symbols and stir people up and bring out the hatred inside people. And this is something we should be aware of because, you know, I think it goes without saying that it's something that we're seeing come back in our world right now, this, you know, playing with the forces of hatred and destructiveness and annihilation. And this is quite worrying. But both of these things are worrying, you know, like the evangelical, mm-hmm. you know, accelerationist apocalyptic thinking, but also kind of like the more, the pagan right is also quite worrying in some ways. So, you know, there's a lot of one of the reasons that I...
Hold on for a second, Jace. We'll be back in a moment with final calls. And welcome back to Coast, Jason Louv with us, our final segment. Jason, give out your websites, if you would, sir.
Yeah, so the best place to go for the book is johnd007.com, because he was the original 007. That was his number in the English Secret Service, which is where Ian Fleming got the number for James Bond from. So johnd007.com, that's where you can get the book. And by the way, I have a special offer, which is that I'm teaching a free course on angelic and Enochian magic this Sunday, and that is free for anybody who orders the new book, John Dee and the Empire of Angels, by this Saturday. If you go to johnd007.com, you can both get the book, and also if you scroll down, you'll see the instructions on how to also get the free class, but that class is not going to be offered ever again. This is the only way to get it. It will not be on sale after this. It's only for people who get the book in the first week.
Interesting pictures and diagrams too in the book.
Oh yeah. I mean, I painstakingly reassembled a lot of the Enochian watchtowers and all of that stuff, which is you can see in the book, and the, you know, the angelic diagram. So when you see them, you see how ornate and intricate and beautiful and also bizarre this stuff was. It's very hard to look at this stuff and just say, well, they must have been making it up, because it's so technically precise. But certainly you can also find out more about me just by going to jasonlouv.com, and everything I've done is linked there. all my books, my magic classes, my social media. And if you're interested in the magic classes, you can go to magic.me, magick.me. But I urge you, if you're going to go one place, go to johnd007.com and pick up the book and make sure to snag that free class, because it'll be gone forever after, or your chance to get it will be gone forever after Saturday.
Super. Okay, let's take some final calls. Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program. Hey, Joe.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay.
Good. I wanted to ask Jason, I've had some communication with Michael the Archangel, and during that communication, he mentioned that I would be in transformation. He was going to help facilitate that transformation. What is the process of this transformation, and what is the purpose of the transformation?
Well, that's wonderful, first of all. And Michael, of course, the Archangel Michael, is not only the primary archangel in all of Christianity, but also the primary archangel in Dean Kelly's sessions. So you'll be really interested to read that stuff, because Michael plays such a starring role and is kind of the one that's in charge of giving all this information. To more broadly answer your question, angelic magic, when you're interacting with angels, has two goals: sanctification and illumination. And sanctification is talked about in many Christian denominations and churches. Sanctification is the kind of getting out of your own way. It's repenting for sin generally, and kind of filing down all the rough bits of a human personality. But it's also understanding that your ego and who you think you are is actually just a construction. It's something that you've created. And so sanctification is kind of the process of humbling a human being and putting them in line with what God and the angels want for humanity, which is essentially to be a humble person who seeks wisdom and understanding instead of a more crass, materialistic person, and somebody who is interested in bringing wisdom and understanding into the world instead of dominating other people, I think. The other side of the equation is illumination, which is as one becomes more sanctified, as one becomes more, at least according to Dean Kelly and Christianity in general, as one becomes more humble and reverent before God. Reverence is one of my favorite words. Reverence is a combination of love and fear. And this is the attitude that all the medieval Christian prayer manuals urge aspirants to have towards God, to both love and fear God, or as it says in the Bible, you know, fear is the beginning of wisdom. But as one becomes more humble and sanctified before God through the process of meditation and spiritual study and perhaps participation in a mainstream Christian church or denomination, the other side is illumination, and that's wisdom and understanding that are given from the spiritual realms to begin a process of internal illumination and of better understanding the universe. And that's the type of thing that unfolds in the lives of people who interact with angels like Michael. And that's also what I'm going to be focusing on and teaching in this course on Sunday that's going to be available for early purchasers of the book. But that's really what it is. And this process in general is called theosis in Greek, in the Greek Orthodox Church, becoming closer to God. In Sanskrit, it's called yoga. In the Hindu tradition, yoga means union with God. And in the Enochian or angelic language, it's called Gebefal, which is the angel's word for the same process, which is the sanctification and illumination of a standard human being. And what that is the process of decreasing, you know, the angelic system is really about decreasing sin and decreasing, you know, mankind stretches between two poles. With one hand, he's stretching towards the angels and towards God. And with the other, he's stretching towards his animal nature. And even below that, the demonic parts of humanity. And so the process of angelic magic is continuing to let go of the urges towards sinking lower. And most people in this world, let's be quite honest, spend their whole lives sinking lower and disintegrating. And angelic magic and spirituality in general is about instead of allowing yourself to disintegrate and become more animalistic as time goes on, to instead reach towards the angels and reach towards the stars and to reach towards all the best parts of humanity, which are symbolized by the angels and also that can be interacted with quite literally. And that's what it's about. So I hope that's helpful.
What did you think of Anton LaVey? He was an occultist, but he dabbled with satanic things, didn't he?
Anton LaVey was a great carny and showman, and he was obviously the founder of the modern Church of Satan. He himself was, I don't think, religious at all or spiritual at all, and he was kind of like a carny, carnival barker or like a P.T. Barnum type guy, and he was very good at winding up the public and playing the media. But one thing that Anton LaVey did, which I greatly disagree with, other than create this whole idea of Satanism, which I don't really find nefarious as much as I find it just kind of tedious. Anton LaVey did kind of publish some Enochian calls in the Satanic Bible that he changed and garbled and tried to turn them into demonic calls, which I think is not only silly and academically inaccurate, but also quite irresponsible. So I'm not a big fan of that. And there was a kind of an effort by satanic groups in the 20th century to incorporate Enochian into their systems, which I'm obviously not a fan of at all. And I think that one of the things that I hope to do with this book is set the record straight.
We'll go to first-time caller now, Trucker Tim in California. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi there.
Okay, my question is this. He talks about crystal balls and Ouija boards. And yet angelic. Now, I was raised Catholic, and I always thought those two were on opposite ends, that I understood you mess with a Ouija board, you don't know what doors you're opening.
That's right.
You know, as far as, you know, demonic. So how do those two go together in your teachings or, you know, what you talk about?
Well, I think there's a right and a wrong way to do everything. And if we look at D.N. Kelly's sessions, I mean, this is an accusation they had to confront quite a lot in their life. One of the other reasons I've written this book, again, is to set the record straight and to show what magic truly is at its highest registers. Because on one hand, we have the Western esoteric tradition, which is this profound and beautiful spiritual path that uses some things that are generally associated with popular occultism. Like, for instance, Western magicians use tarot, they use crystal balls, they use things like this. But it's in a much different and more profound and deeper and more spiritual sense than you normally see these things being used in. So, you know, so often in the modern world, we see, you know, the use of, you know, we associate crystal balls and Ouija boards and all of this with just kind of fortune tellers and, you know, maybe people misusing it or people getting into trouble because they don't know what they're doing. And I agree with you, by the way, you don't want to mess with this stuff if you don't know what you're doing, if you just kind of indiscriminately, and I have seen so many people just mess with this stuff without taking it seriously, without understanding the rules, without understanding that it is a science. And it has to be done as a way of, contacting higher beings and goodness and light, but also through a very almost mathematically rigorous sense. I mean, training in magic is like training to become a doctor. It's a lifelong, process of learning how to do these things. So in the same way that you wouldn't give a loaded gun to a child, yet that gun would be perhaps used correctly by a police officer or, you know, somebody in the military or something like this. You know, a weapon can be used to both harm indiscriminately or it can be used correctly to preserve life. It's the same thing with magic. So a lot of, and again, you know, I've spent so much of my life trying to make clear to people that this actually is a real science and a real practice, and it has to be taken seriously. And there are rules to it. And unfortunately, in our culture, one of the things that has happened is we are just beginning after almost, 100, 200 years. Our culture has slammed the door on magic because of industrialization and materialist science and all this. And in the last couple of decades, Western people have started to get interested in the idea of magic again and the subtle forces of reality. But one of the unfortunate things about the position that we're in is that people, they're interested in it, yet they don't quite take it seriously and they don't have a reverence for it. And they're not convinced it's real. And for that reason, they can get into it and they can burn their fingers. But they're not burning their fingers because there's something inherently bad about magic. They're just burning their fingers because they don't know what they're doing. They haven't been properly shown how this thing actually works, which is one of the reasons, by the way, one of the reasons that I teach online at magic.me and I write books is not so much to, get everyone into it, but it's quite frankly harm reduction, where I want people to be able to have a source where they can go to, where they can understand how they can do these things correctly and accurate and as a real spiritual path to gain wisdom and improve their understanding of the universe, and not to, just stumble, break everything and stumble into things in the dark and bang into the walls and all this. I mean, it really is a technical process, and you have to understand that in order to get it to work. I hope that answers your question.
Let's go to Shelley now, Long Island, New York. Hi, Shell, go ahead.
Salutations, George and Jason.
Thank you.
Speaking of synchronicities, I am the biggest conspiracist amongst my family and friends, and I don't often send them videos, obviously, but today I did because of Barbara Bush's death, so you know where I'm going with this. Aleister Crowley, I sent that video out, and I did not know you were going to be on the show, obviously, but this whole frequencies, even telepathy, my synchronicities are building exponentially, the frequency of them. So I looked at the mainstream media. They said Barbara Bush's dad was some publisher. They didn't mention her mom. This is going with the conspiracy that Barbara Bush is daughter to the most wickedest man who ever lived, Aleister Crowley. The Bush family does not deny this allegation. I don't know what they're saying currently. And then the whole tie to JPL, L. Ron Hubbard, Scientology, NASA, and the occult. And George, there's something personal. I can't even believe this because I want to see if there's a New York tie with Aleister and the whole Brookhaven and their beginnings out here. And he spent 40 days and 40 nights on Esopus Island, which is a part of the Margaret Lewis Norrie State Park. How funny is that?
I hope it's spelled differently.
N-O-R-R-I-E.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Different. Good. Jason, what do you think of the Barbara Bush, Aleister Crowley tie-in? Have you heard of that before?
I have. I'm so
glad you have.
Asked this because I can.
And we've got a minute left, by the way, Jason.
Okay, let me set this to rest for good. Okay, so the rumor was that Pauline Pierce, who was Barbara's mother, was involved in a sex ritual with Crowley in the 20s. There's no evidence for that. They just have, all that we know is that they were acquainted.
They knew each other.
They knew each other. But by the way, this rumor comes from an April Fool's Day blog post written about 12 days ago, just on somebody's personal blog. And it's kind of taken off and got a life of its own. However, they are kind of ideological relatives in that both the evangelical Republicans, as I've touched upon, and Crowley draw their inspiration from the same kind of apocalyptic dispensationalist theology and the idea of drawing the world closer to the apocalypse, which is something that I actually talk about at great length in the book. So there's a kind of a deeper mythological significance to this.
Super. Thanks for having us on with this incredible story, John D. and the Empire of Angels. Jason, thank you so much. On our next Coast to Coast program, it will be our Art Bell tribute show. A number of guests, you'll participate. We'll take your phone calls, and we'll have clips of some memorable moments with Art Bell. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.